So let me just first start by introducing Professor Leila Ahmed, who is the Victor S. Thomas Research Professor of Divinity at Harvard Divinity School. Prior to her appointment at Harvard Divinity School, Professor Ahmed was Professor of Women's Studies and Near Eastern Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. While at the University of Massachusetts, Professor Ahmed was Director of the Women's Studies Program from 1992 to 1995 and Director of the Near Eastern Studies Program from 1991 to 1992. Professor Ahmed is author of several books and numerous other publications. Her 1993 book, Women and Gender in Islam, The Historical Roots of a Modern Debate, published by Yale University Press, is now a classic in the fields of women's studies, Islamic studies, and Middle Eastern studies. She's also author of Border Passage from Cairo to America, A Woman's Journey, published by Penguin Books in 2000, which combines Professor Ahmed's own reflections on her changing home country and her childhood in Egypt, with her reflections on her evolving identity as a feminist in the United States. Professor Ahmed's latest book, A Quiet Revolution, The Veil's Resurgence from the Middle East to America, has been widely acclaimed and was the winner of the Grawemeyer Award in Religion in 2012. Professor Ahmed's current research and writing interests include Islam and gender in America, and issues of gender, race, and class in the Middle East in the late colonial era. And I am Soha Bayoumi. I am a lecturer in the History of Science Department at Harvard University and Assistant Dean of Harvard College. So, Leila, thank you so much again for being with us and for joining this oral history project, the AMU's Oral History Project. So, I also just want to say that I think you are in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right? Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Right.
So, and so am I. So we're both in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and today's October 15th, but we're conducting this remotely over Zoom, given the current COVID pandemic.
Amuse, the start of Amuse, I was actually present when it was born at Mesa. The mother was Sohail Joseph, and we had a conversation, I remember, and she was just cooking up the idea. So that was my earliest memory of Amuse. It was at a conference at which both, it must have been a Mesa conference, and both Sohail and I were giving talks, and we met in the breaks and so on. I'm trying to remember, there was something quite funny about the naming of it, Amuse, because it's amusing, as it were. And Saad, I think, or me, or whoever was there too, wondered whether this would make fun of us, whether this is a good idea or not. But anyway, that was that's my memory of the founding of Amuse. Because then by the next Mesa meeting, Saad had got it all together.
So yes. What do you recall about the conversations that you had at the early, you know, those initial meetings for AMU's founding? Like, what were the main reasons people were citing for founding AMU's? Why was AMU's needed? What was the conversation like?
I think, as I said, Sahad was a major linchpin in this story. I can't remember who else was involved, maybe other people, but not as critically as her. And I think Sahad may have founded other things before that. So, and I think it was the whole the notion of having something the equivalent of Mesa, where people who worked on women could get together and talk and have their own space. So that was the founding of it.
And what role do you think AMU's has had in feminist academic studies or in Middle Eastern studies or women's studies in the Middle East in particular?
I think it had a huge, immeasurable impact, I think, as networking, as a place where you saw all the names of who was writing on in this field, wherever they lived. It's very well connected, obviously, in the Middle East and North Africa. And I don't know at this point, but it must be much wider than that. So it was very important. If you wanted to know what work was going on where, you just went to the Amuse list and looked at the Amuse journal, and that was a very easy way of finding out.
And what motivated you personally to join or, you know, be part of that community at the beginning?
I don't think it even crossed my mind not to be. Since I knew Saad and it seemed a great idea, why wouldn't I join?
Yeah. How do you see AMU's and JMU's also developing today? What changes have you seen over the years, and what perhaps future directions would you like to see the field or the community of scholars move toward?
Well, you know, that's a difficult question because I've been connected in and out. I haven't been following all the details. So there are many people who have been core members, like besides Saad, Miriam Cook comes to mind. I don't know how closely Judith Tucker, she's certainly been one of the key figures there.
Judith Tucker,
yeah. So there are a whole lot of people who have been much more closely involved than I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what the future of it is, I mean, I have no idea. It's, how can one, you know, even into the year 2000, no. Certainly in the mid-90s, I would never, it was unimaginable that the field would become the field that it is today, a kind of a major world field, really. So I have no idea where it's going now. I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's even hard to just keep up with all of the scholarship that is, I think I almost gave up on the ability to keep up with everything that is being produced in the field.
It has no limits. I mean, it's global, you know, anywhere where there are Muslims, and not even Muslims, Arabs. I guess since it's an affiliate of MESA, it has a Middle East focus.
Yes, it's Middle East.
Nevertheless, I mean, in women studies in Islam or in the Middle East or Arab world, it's limitless. It's, you know, it's every entire world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I'm sure it'll go very exciting places, but I don't know where.
What influence would you say AMU's or JMU's may have had on your research and teaching over the years?
Again, it's measureless. I have no idea. I mean, I'm sure I drew on whatever I was reading and I certainly did keep up with, always have the JMU's and follow things on AMU's too. So I couldn't give you any sense of exactly how much, but it's certainly been part of what I think about when I venture into some area of that field.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other things that you would like to add that you think would be valuable for this oral history project about the history of the association or its development, or, you know, the moment of its founding or its development, its trajectory or its future? Anything you think would be helpful for posterity in kind of like building that oral history?
I think what you're doing and Nancy Gallagher, she's the main inspiration behind this?
I mean, it's something that a lot of the members of AMU's have talked about, Saad Joseph, Sandra Hale, obviously Nancy, we're very involved in. There are two history projects that are being taken, by, one of them is the oral history project, which Nancy, I believe, is the chair of the committee. And there is another one that is kind of more documented or more document-based, which is, I think Sandra is in charge of that, if I'm correct.
It's a very exciting project, and I look forward to reading and seeing all the materials. And it's a right time before people begin to forget its origins.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a moment like when the field is kind of like becoming so big, as we were just talking, and you know, it's and also mature enough to like be self-reflective and, you know, self-aware and kind of like how it's developed and how it's changed and it's you know, founding moments. So I think it's an important project.
Yeah, it is.
So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Leila. I will share the recording with you before I send it out. And